back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I got my green screen working here, and all of our sponsors have been very, very supportive as we move into, and Donna, I know you're finding this hard to believe, 3 years of Baltimore Positive. Our friends at State Fair have been feeding us from the very beginning, pandemic or no pandemic, and across the street at El Guapo. We appreciate their support. Certainly encourage you to visit them out in the 21228 curbside. Stop in, maybe even get yourself a little margarita after hours at El Guapo at the bar. Our friends at Fadley's have been shipping those crab cakes all over the world. They're going to be bringing them to you in Catonsville as well. I'm going to be bringing them back here this weekend and eating them up. We're going to be talking about crab cakes and crab cake eating all summer long. But this week, now turning the corner into year two in COVID, Don, the Maryland Hospital Association has come together along with our friends at KO to provide, as we say here, wise conversations, Don. And I know you and running Baltimore County hospitals, one of the things that Johnny O, who's going to be joining us later in the week, very, very concerned about all sorts of things with capacity and where we are. And a year into this, Don, we've got some great guests today.
Well, we do have some great guests. As I said off the air, in all sincerity, we're talking to heroes today. We talked to a lot of different folks. In the next 30 minutes, we're talking heroes. I have a soft spot, obviously, in my heart for GBMC, right down the street from county offices. Know it well. And it's really a pleasure, Nestor, to welcome Avery Wright, Michael Frack, and David Goldsboro. Let's see, we've got a nurse, a respiratory therapist. You know, we've got it all covered. It's a labor and delivery nurse as well. And we're going to hear really from the front lines what it's been like. And I guess I just, David, let me start. We'll sort of go around the horn here. But I joked to some folks on social media not long ago. My wife and I are probably, you know, in a handful of people who have stuck with Grey's Anatomy for 20 years, right? You know, somehow we have stayed with Grey's Anatomy for the past 20 years, not missed it. And I watched this year when it was clear to me that what Shonda Rhimes was trying to do with that show was to take us inside the world of healthcare workers. And I found the show incredibly stressful, incredibly at times difficult to watch because I feel so much for the folks playing you, quite honestly, the folks that are playing you every week. It appears overwhelming. We're about, as we air this broadcast, about 1 year from the shutdown. Just remarkable in itself. I don't think any of us will ever forget Friday, March 13th. David, take us back to the beginning. Take us back to March, what it felt like. And talk about, could you have ever predicted what your year would be?
Well, I don't think anybody could predict what was coming. I was going to say it was scary in the beginning because we didn't know anything about COVID. So I would say it was organized chaos. So, you know, all of the patients that were coming in, all of our patients coming into the ER, we didn't know, you know, exactly how it was transmitted. You hear a lot of things on, you know, the media and social media. But I think that, and I really feel that MedStar did a great job of preparing us for something like this. So there wasn't a time that we didn't feel like we didn't have the proper PPE or we were being so overwhelmed. It really did run well. And we really got to give props to our upper management for that. My managers, you know, especially in the respiratory department. This was a time for us to really shine and give a good insight of what respiratory therapists actually do. We've always taken that back seat. And then when COVID hit, all of a sudden, you know, we're driving. You know, we're in the rooms more than just, you know, anybody here. You know, it went from, you know, to manage these patients, they're all respiratory. So, you know, in the beginning, it was a little overwhelming, but it was organized. So I've learned a great deal over the last year, that's for sure.
David,
I'm sorry, Nestor.
Yeah, I lost my mother about 3 years ago, and she was in her late 90s, and she had had emphysema for years, and I watched her battle respiratory issues, and it's literally what, you know, it's how she expired in the end, and it was difficult to watch. I don't think I've ever spoken about it, but for what you do and watching what was happening in the other side of the world, where literally this time last year, trucks were showing up, everybody in white suits, hauling people out. We're watching this on the nightly news before it came here. We watched what happened in Italy, and I have some friends there. When you saw those things and knew that this was going to be something that attacked lungs, for you, when you saw your first COVID patient, can you speak to how this is different than maybe what my mother went through or anybody else went through, that this illness attacked in a different way that maybe you had never seen before last spring?
Yeah, it was quite scary in the beginning as far as not knowing what this process was going to be like. We know how to manage asthma patients and COPD patients, but COVID, nobody did. But we quickly figured out, you know, a lot of the things that needed to be done for these patients. So, you know, in the very, very beginning, it was just a trial and error. You had to do many things to figure out what actually worked. So, you know, seeing that first COVID patient, I remember the first COVID room I went into, I had to be honest with you, I was very, very nervous. But we had gone through so much training when Ebola was around and how to properly use your PPE. You know, we just went in and we did what we were taught to do. And it's what we went to school to do.
Yeah, I call this thing a social studies experiment, a learning experiment. Mm-hmm. I would think even at your level, you, as you pointed out, you've learned a lot this last year, correct? Yeah,
tremendous amount.
I want to reset. We have Avery Wrigley here, David Goldsboro, as well as Michelle Frock, all literally heroes out on the front. Michelle, I want to bring you in. Avery, I'm going to bring you in as well. Michelle, for you, you're in a different part of this, correct? Like your background, labor and delivery nurse is what I have. But more than anything, what this has done to whole hospitals last year were families, husbands, people, loved ones that you can't visit, right? And tell me about labor and delivery in a different part of the hospital.
So, yeah, everything you hear on the news about, you know, the ICUs and all that, we are almost like a separate entity in terms of what we're seeing. Every patient that comes in and gets admitted is tested for COVID. So we know who has it. And it's only been a handful that actually have tested positive. And of that handful, nobody's symptomatic. Nobody knows they had it. You know, they're just as surprised to find out. If they test positive, they can no longer have a support person during labor or after, you know, once the baby's born and they're taking care of the baby, they're completely on their own except for the nursing staff, which, especially for some of these newer moms coming in, you have this whole birth plan and then boom, you have COVID. Sorry, dad, you have to leave. And, you know, mom, you're on your own until it's time to go home. So I really think it's shined a spotlight on the labor delivery nurses, the mother baby nurses, to be their support person in the room with them, helping them navigate. I just had a baby and now I'm a mom. So
Michelle, talk about that. Pick up on that, because I'm trying to think of your training, and we'll get to Avery in a minute because I know she's a recent grad. I think we just went in the last couple of years. But Michelle, when you were training for this, obviously COVID was, I don't mean training for COVID, but back to when you were being trained to be a labor and delivery nurse, I can't imagine this level of involvement with a patient was part of that training. Was that suddenly a very new thing? And you looked around and said, in addition to nurse, we've got to be family now and we've got to step up in a different way. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but was any of that happening?
Absolutely. And I would even say that this past year, I know it's been chaotic for so many nurses, but I have re-fell in love with why I do what I do, that to be that person's, you know, support and just helping them navigate through all of it. It's giving me such a sense of fulfillment that there are some long days and, you know, you come home, you're like, oh, I hope I did my best. But at the end of the day, I know that I held a mom's hand during delivery because her husband couldn't be there. I taught her how to breastfeed and taught her how to, change her first diaper just because dad's not there, her support person isn't there. So, you know, it's why I became a nurse, is to help people. And I think, you know, this pandemic has just kind of taught nurses, you know, slow down and get back to the basics, that we're here to just provide the care right at the bedside, which I've really enjoyed this past year.
Michelle, is the first time, and again, having lived through this as a dad, and then suffered through, which I think is even worse, as a granddad waiting for the grandchildren to be delivered, is the first time that dad is seeing the baby and mom when they're leaving the hospital during COVID. Is that the first connection?
In some cases, yes. At my hospital, we're fortunate that the labor and delivery mother baby unit is on the ground level, and there are some bay windows that have access to outside to walk up to. So there have been a few cases where dad was granted permission to go into this kind of locked garden, and he set up a lawn chair and he's just at the window while she's giving birth. We also have these iPads that allow for FaceTiming that the patients get to have during their whole stay, so they could stay on FaceTime the entire time if they wanted. But essentially, yes, after mom delivers, it's time to leave. We walk her upstairs and dad is waiting there with the car, and this is the first time that he's seen his baby.
Don, I saw Jake Costello share a home video on Facebook this week.
Yeah, exactly.
And a year into this, it's the first time literally that I've seen this. I mean, I've seen a lot of death, a lot of horrible things, but birth and dad and little brother showing up at the front door of the hospital to meet mom and the baby. And it occurred to me for the first time, I'm like, oh my, she's been in the hospital alone the whole time. Right. There's a psychological part of this, right? And Avery, maybe bring you into this as well, just in all of this, in dealing not only with the person who's sick, but everyone on the outside. I can't imagine not being able to be with my wife 155 nights that she spent fighting for her life with leukemia. I think for all the there's mental health involved and support that's needed amongst everyone at every level, correct?
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's really, like Michelle was saying, it's kind of bringing in a different part of nursing, because you're not just, as a whole, not just, you know, a specialty or anything like that, but, you know, you're not just physically making people feel better, but you're their rock at that time. I know there was a lot of cases where we were the patient's family. We were kind of like their key to outside, because they're stuck in this little room and they can't, you know, they can't see anything. They have a small window. But their families, like our floor was elevated, we're not on the ground floor. So their families couldn't come up to the window. And a lot of times, you know, all they wanted to do was just be with their family, and they would do anything that they could to go home just so that they could see their family.
Avery, what kind of nursing have you been doing the last year? What, you know, 3 years into this, a younger nurse, but obviously COVID has changed everyone's trajectory. I don't think anybody went to school thinking about, I'll be there doing the COVID thing during the pandemic or the plague that's coming.
Sure. So I actually started on the floor that I work at now. I graduated in 2018. And it's just, it's a telemetry stroke progressive care unit. We're the primary stroke floor at GBMC. We have the most telemetry beds. But when COVID hit, starting on March 24th, we actually became the COVID unit. So we're a 30-bed unit, and all 30 of our beds were COVID patients. So our daily routine definitely changed. Instead of handling, you know, stroke patients and heart failure and, you know, dialysis and stuff like that, it was all COVID.
And of expertise for anyone on COVID at that point is, as David had pointed out earlier, everyone's in information mode at that point, correct?
Correct. So this was completely new. You know, some of our nurses had been through Ebola and all of that, but the majority of us had not. And it was scary, and it was just really anxiety-inducing knowing, you know, every shift that I came in, what was I going to come into? You know, are my patients that I had the day before still there? Were they upgraded to the ICU? You know, what level of care are we providing today? For a while, we were the only ones that were going into patient room, us and physicians and respiratory therapists. So we were the social worker, we were the physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy, all coming in to see these patients. And we would gown up, go in, evaluate the patient, and then come out and report what we evaluated to the, you know, the required discipline. So there, our exposure was increased, and other people, you know, didn't really step foot on our unit. It was just kind of like, oh, how are they? How are they doing? You think that they, you know, would benefit from a wheelchair at home kind of thing. And it was put very, very deeply on our recommendations. So we kind of played every role.
Well, I guess I would ask all three of you, tell me if this is true or not. I don't know how, or whether it's, you know, something that we just in our mind is happening to a greater extent. But one of the things that I wondered about seemed to me that over the past year, if you're a healthcare provider, one of these healthcare heroes like you are on the front lines, that you are losing more patients in your care, maybe not in labor delivery, hopefully, but more patients coming into the hospital than you're typically used to losing as a healthcare worker. David, is that true? In other words, all of a sudden, was the sense of loss greater than it typically is in a typical year for you?
It was, especially in the beginning, but there's a lot of success stories that have come out of here as well. So, you know, one of the things that's hard to deal with is when you're working in this kind of conditions all day and then you go home and you just hear about all of the misery and all of the death and things that you'll hear in the media and the social media. You know, there's so many good stories that come out of here. And you know, Franklin Square has done an excellent job at providing care for these patients. And I tell you, we have more patients that walk out of here, you know, that's had COVID than you hear the, you know, the misery stories. And we have our share, just like every other hospital. But there are a lot of great stories, too. And that's what we try to focus in on.
Joined today. I just want to reset here. The Maryland Hospital Association has been kind enough, along with KO, to provide some real heroes for us to talk frankly in a Baltimore positive way about COVID and how it's affected our community. We're going to have Johnny O on later. Of course, former Baltimore County Executive and my partner, Don Moeller, here, along with Avery Wrigley, who's an RN at the GBMC, talking on the COVID unit. Michelle Frock from MedStar Health as well, labor and delivery nurse, and David Goldsboro as well, a respiratory therapist, talking about all aspects of this. Go ahead, Don. I know you had some more questions.
I just, Michelle, David led into my question really when he talks about in the midst of this loss, there were also great successes and there were moments that were life-affirming. And Nestor alluded to a friend of ours, Jamie Costello, bringing a baby home just recently. You talked about that moment where dad is reuniting with his family as they leave the hospital. But paint that picture for us, because I'm sure there were times this year where you were down there and got to see that reunion, so to speak. Talk about what it felt like and just the emotion of those moments from your perspective as a nurse.
It's also not normal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, when our patients are ready to go, you know, call dad, tell him he's going to meet us, you know, outside. And, you know, we're getting in the wheelchair, we're getting all the belongings, mom's holding baby. And it's a few minute hike to get upstairs and outside. So, you know, going down the hall, getting on the elevator and, you know,
mom been there. I mean, in a normal.
If mom delivered with a C-section, it's about a 3-night minimum stay. If she delivered naturally, it's 2-night.
So it's been a couple of days. And the baby's been on the earth a while. And dad has a picture. Grandparents. Don's in Catonsville losing his mind.
Losing my mind.
Losing my mind.
I would have been. That's why I need Michelle to talk about these reunions. I would have been a basket case grandfather.
FaceTime wouldn't cut it for you?
No, wouldn't have cut it. I would have been a miserable human being. So, Michelle, you make your way through this hallway and you're around the corner and mom sees dad and dad sees mom and baby. Talk about that.
It's, you know, the excitement and, you know, the apprehension, it's palpable. You know, I can just feel her, you know, pushing the wheelchair. She's getting a little more tense and kind of sitting up a little more erect because, you know, I got to say, hold on, let me lock the wheelchair before you get up, you know, don't jump out to go meet dad. And literally dad can't come in the doors. So we have to then go over the threshold of the exit. And it's amazing, you know, dad tearing up and not always just dad. Sometimes it is grandma, grandpa, the siblings, you know, there with balloons and flowers and somebody's recording.
And you get to do this every day. See, this is the joy. This is a great story.
Is that the moment, Michelle, where you say, yep, this is why I do this?
Absolutely. And then, you know, after get everybody in the car, you know, see them off, I'm walking back down to my unit and I just have a smile too. Like, all right, good. Like they made it out. Everybody got reunited and on to the next, you know, who's coming in next. So it's been very rewarding, not just for them, but for me as well.
Well, on behalf of all the moms and dads and grandmoms and granddads out there, thanks for doing all that. You know, Avery, that's the upside. And that brings a smile. I looked around, all of us are smiling when Michelle talks about that. But take us to the flip side as the year went on. We know we had a lack of, and maybe you talk about this. Did you all experience, and I'll start with you, Avery, a lack of PPE in the beginning? Were you reusing masks? Did you not have enough face shields? And were you afraid, and was your family afraid for you?
So we were very fortunate. We actually never really had a shortage of PPE. We had a stockpile as like a, you know, used it. But we were given an N95 mask. Everybody was fitted properly and we did have to, you know, reuse the N95 mask. But we never really got pushed back on if we needed a new one. They set up this little, almost like an office. We called it the PPE hub. And if our PPE was soiled, you know, after a long day or after, you know, two shifts or whatever, we could go up there, tell them we needed a new N95 and they would gladly hand us a new one.
Were you afraid for your personal safety, Avery? Your health?
I do and I don't. Part of me almost took this as an honor that, you know, we were chosen to be the ones to fight this. There was a lot of uncertainty, like David was saying in the beginning. Tests were taking a long time to come back at first before we had the rapid tests. And, you know, it was that limbo every couple days of, you know, is this person positive, you know, or the patient that we've been working with that wasn't, you know, with low suspicion came back positive. They were just asymptomatic. But as the department and as the whole facility got more comfortable dealing with, you know, COVID positive patients, our nerves kind of calmed too. I feel like we were provided the proper PPE. Of course, you know, we were anxious going home. My nightly routine after a shift completely changed. You know, and my husband is very supportive, but he was anxious too. And there was a lot of, you know, my family lives out of state, and we didn't see them for a couple months. You know, we basically quarantined in our little 2-bedroom apartment and, you know.
But you're not really quarantining because you're going to work every night, right? Literally, right?
Right, right. So basically, I went to work, but all the fun stuff I had to quarantine from.
remarkable story. And I know you all are busy and we appreciate the time. Before we let you get out of here, wondering if you were to write a book or someone came to you and they're writing a book and they're highlighting a year in the life of our healthcare heroes, it would go around the horn here for a minute. What would be your snapshot, David? What would be your page in that book?
Wear your mask. That would be the, you know, that snapshot of my book. You know, so many people that you'll see on social media will say you don't need a mask and they know somebody that got it and they did just fine. Or, you know, the fact of the matter is not everybody does fine. And you really do need to wear your mask and you really need to take the precautions, you know, when you do go places, you know, like the grocery store and, you know, things that you have to do. You really do want to wear that mask.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You take me to another area now. And again, and I guess, Michelle, David talked about wearing the mask. I'll come to you because it does make me think how frustrating. I don't want you to speak for every healthcare provider in the United States. Speak for Michelle. But how frustrating was it for you being on the front lines, watching millions of Americans go out and talk about this not being real and this being a hoax and people weren't really dying and you're walking in there every day putting your life. How frustrating was the political atmosphere of the past year for you as a frontline healthcare worker?
Super frustrating. Unlike David and Avery, I have not dealt with any death or, you know, really sad stories from this pandemic, but I'm just seeing, you know, women give birth by themselves and, you know, families not being able to come and share in one of the most joyous times, you know, of a loved one's life. So that to me was frustrating on behalf of my patients that because the public isn't following the guidelines and such, and maybe this mom did everything right, but someone else didn't. And therefore, you know, she contracted COVID and now she has to go at this alone. So pretty frustrated. So I agree with David, please wear your mask.
Avery, how about you? What's your snapshot in that book? We're putting together a book. We're telling the story of healthcare heroes. What's your page talking about?
I think we'll just do your part. You know, that includes wearing a mask. Don't go out if you don't have to. You know, utilize those delivery services and, you know, you don't have to go to the beach in the summer. You don't have to go, you know, away on vacation. Just do your part and be mindful of other people. Because like David said, just because you might be okay, your neighbor might not be okay.
Now, we appreciate you guys coming on with these stories. We appreciate the work you do. I think I green roomed all of you and said that when I see these videos of people coming from hospital circumstances, it reminds me of my trials and tribulations with my wife. And I can't imagine not being able to be there and be a part of it. But you guys, mental health, physical health, emotional health, and keeping everybody safe. We appreciate all the work you guys are doing. David Goldsboro joining us, Michelle Frock, as well as Avery Wrigley on behalf of all of our friends at the Maryland Hospital Association and KO, bringing them to us from MedStar Health as well as GBMC. Stay safe. Wash your hands. I'm already listening to you. I'm wearing my mask and washing my hands. We appreciate y'all coming on and appreciate the great work you do.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have some heroes on, Don Moeller. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and all of our sponsors, including Fadley's and State Fair and our friends at El Guapo and Moeller and Gary Realty, we are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.